Siamo con l'Europa.
Già.
Good morning, everybody. It is such a nice day today in Bloemfontein, and I hear that some of the people have some trouble with our very hectic traffic this morning. So I hope that you all will be welcome today here with us. It's not a formal welcome now. It is only a quick note to say to welcome you all here, that the formal welcomes and all that stuff will be done at the conference tomorrow. There is some arrangements quickly. Tiana, if you can just stand up for us. She will be in front at the registrator. Any problems that you have with registration, with anything else, you are welcome to speak to her, and we will try to help you out with anything. So please make use of her, and she will be there for the whole day. And then also for those who are using the buses this afternoon, she will also help you with that. The tea and coffee venue, I hope that you all had your cup of tea and coffee, but it is just outside this door and up in the, with the stairs in the main building, where you can get your tea and coffee as well as the lunch this afternoon. You are requested to please keep your name tags on at all times so that we know who we are, all of us. That's the best plan. That's also for security reasons. So just keep that on. And then, yes, and also at the venue where the tea and coffee is, but also here at the registration, there are also some toilets if you need for that. It's now a very privilege for me to welcome Stephen Downs with us today. He arrived in South Africa a day or two ago, and he is, as you can see with all the stuff, he's very technically inclined. And he is at the moment in Moncton in New Brunswick in Canada at the Institute for Information Technology E-Learning Research Group. But we met him actually on the internet with all the weblogs and his research newsletter OL Daily, that's for Online Learning Daily. And he doesn't reach only the people in Canada, but all over the world. And that's how we met him, actually, on the net. And it's a very big privilege for us to have him here today with us. And he's going to take the stage for the whole day. He was going to arrange everything and tell us and speak with us. And the only break will be at about 10:30, I think. Then we will break for tea, and then, I think, 1 o'clock for lunch. Stephen, enjoy it, and very welcome with us.
Well, thank you, everyone. Works much better if you turn it on. It's a great privilege for me to be here. This is my very first time in South Africa, and in fact, my very first time in Africa at all. So for me, this has been quite exciting. I'm still a lot jet-lagged. So if I fall down during the talk, wait 10 minutes, then leave. I especially for these pre-conferences, you know, when I do, like, I'll be doing a talk tomorrow, I'll be all formal on that. I'll still look like this because you can't make me formal. But for a talk like this, you know, this pre-conference and that, where we're going to be together all day, basically, I like to keep things really informal. And what that means, most especially and most importantly, is that you do not have to sit there and be quiet. If you have something to say any time during this talk, anything at all, you know, if you don't like what I'm saying, if you don't agree with me, If you want me to talk more clearly, to slow down, to speed up, to get off the stage, to go back to Canada, whatever. I want you to feel free to contribute. And if I'm busy talking, right, and you want to talk, just sort of wave your hand. You don't need to do it a lot, just a little bit. I'll catch it, and then I'll finish the sentence, because I always like to finish my sentences. And I have very long sentences. I'll finish the sentence that I'm on, and then we'll have the dialogue. There's so much today. You're not going to believe this. Because we're doing, you know, they asked me to do Web 2.0. But this is also the first stop on a trip that I'm doing that takes me not just here, but also in Cape Town, and also in Sydney, Australia, and four stops in New Zealand. And that's why I got all my gear here. You never know what you're going to need when you're in New Zealand. And so, and I'm trying to make this, in certain ways, a bit of a special trip, in the sense that I'm trying to show a lot of what I talk about. And so you're going to see some of that. What you're also going to see are some mistakes. I promise you things that won't work. Because I'm going to be trying some of this stuff for the first time today. And that's the way I like to do it. It always works well when you test it, right? But you never know whether it's really going to work until you get in front of a bunch of people and you try it. Couple of really, to me, that are interesting things. During the lunch hour, I'm not sure where the lunch is, and I'm not sure where I'll be doing this, but I created a video from the time I was in Colombia about a month ago, and I'll be showing that to an audience for the very first time at the lunch hour today. So it's the world premiere of my video. Now, before you get all excited, it's also the very first video I've created. So, and I'll have a bit of a story to tell about that, and I'll tell the story, but I'm going to be showing it at lunchtime, so that if you really don't want to just sit there and watch a video, you don't have to. The other thing, too, this is the first time I've ever tried this, and so, of course, I had to try this here in Africa, where I knew I'd have, you know, everything I expect. Nothing would be different from home. We're going to be, later this afternoon, Skype casting. Now, if you don't know what Skype casting is yet, don't worry about it. But basically, if it works, and if people out there got my message, then starting at about 2 o'clock this afternoon, we're going to be joined by people from around the world who will be able to listen to what's happening here and take part in our discussion. Cross my fingers, maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. Who knows? That's in preparation. Tomorrow, of course, I'm doing my talk, and it's a keynote, which is kind of cool, and I intend to Skype cast that from here, if it works today. And if so, it'll be the first keynote ever that has been Skype cast. So it'll be a world's first. So today we get the world premiere of my video, and tomorrow we get the world's first Skype cast keynote. So how does that sound so far? Okay, now, focus. My website has been down for the last 2 days because, of course, I'm on a trip, and as soon as I get on the plane, my website crashes, always. And yesterday was a holiday in Canada. It's a national holiday, Labor Day, and so it's a long weekend, and when there's a long weekend, there's no email. Just that crashes, too. It's Microsoft. You can't run for 3 days without crashing. So, fortunately, my presentation is kind of spread out all over the place, and it doesn't depend on my website. For a while there, I thought I was using slides, but I'm not using slides. So, let's see. I and you ask others to come up with some filler stories. About the time with me and this bear that were in town. Oh, here we go. Okay. Now, this is just downs.jot.com. This is available to you. You can go to it on the internet after this talk. I'll be talking about what kind of website this is later on, but for now, I'll just say that it's a wiki. And we look at this and we realize, wait a sec, this isn't the title of today's talk, so I'll have to fix that. And I'm not actually sure, it's eLearning 2.0, right? This page contains more than plain text. Okay. So, you see, and you can get away with this. Well, you can get away with this if you press the mouse button. There you go. Oh, there is a mouse here. It's just, it's a left-handed mouse. Or, well, it's, oh, come on. Don't be so silly. We are in Firefox, right? Yes. Isn't that weird? I just wasn't reading the instructions. They've changed this on me. Very annoying. Sorry about that, folks. Like I said, remember I promised things wouldn't, well, I didn't expect it to be the very first thing, but... So anyhow, my friend and I, we went down to Montreal this one day, and we were going to go see Aerosmith, so we went to the Montreal Forum, but they canceled Aerosmith, but we went anyways. Yeah, naturally. All right, and of course, it's not my computer, I have no email. Oh, isn't this fine? Okay, we'll just go with, I can't change the wiki, that's too bad. Isn't that weird? Why would it do that to me? Alright. So, okay, the title of today's talk has now changed. This is what you call adapting. Basically, where I'm going to begin, how many of you have heard of Blogger and blogging? Alright, so we'll say about 2/3 of you, so that's a good place to start. I'm going to cover Blogger and blogging and personal publishing, and then I'm going to look at that with respect to blogging and education specifically. Then I'm going to go into some more advanced applications of this type, content management systems, PostNude, Drupal, Plone. Then I'm going to talk about photos, photo editing, creating your own photos, Flickr, sound, podcasting, Skype casting, although it's not on there because I can't edit it, and then podcasting and learning. And then we're going to get a little technical near the end, but that's okay. By the time we get near the end, it won't seem so technical. You'll be all hands at it by then. So I'll talk about RSS and blog lines and Technorati, and hopefully by then my website will be up, and these last three items on this list on my website. Are you able to read that up there? It's pretty miserable. I don't think that, so let's make that bigger. View. Text size. Increase. View. Text size. Increase. View. How's that? I really don't know why I can't edit. That's really annoying. And of course, it doesn't recognize my account. So. Oh well. All right. So that's the plan. I may abandon that plan at any moment, depending on what I feel like. No, actually, that's the plan. But I want to say this: this session is for all of you, not for me. I had my fun yesterday walking around in the game reserve. So, if you don't like this, tell me, and I'll go off and talk about different things as well, and I'm quite willing to cover any related topic, or even any unrelated topic. Pet law in California, no problem. I know nothing about it, but I will talk about it. But how does this sound as a plan so far? Sounds good? Getting some nods? Okay. Some horrified looks from the organizers? This isn't what we thought we were getting. No, we're getting something polished by somebody who's experienced at presenting. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. That's not going to block anyone's view. It's just, if I put it here, it'll fall off. I've done that. All right. Now, again, this is going to be familiar to a lot of you. And we're going to do the dance with the computer all day. I actually have had slower bandwidth, so this is fine. What blogging is, I mean, blogging really, when you get right down to it, is nothing but a way of creating a website. And blogging, in one sense, is like a website that has dated entries. You know, some from today, some from yesterday. So it sounds a lot like a journal or a personal log, and that's how it got the name weblog, and blog is short for weblog. So, isn't that nice? Yeah, there we go. Now, here's the site that will help you make a blog. And it's been running slow all week. This is not just our connection. This should be faster no matter what. Blogger is now owned by Google, and Google is pretty good at you know, making their pages fairly fast. What I'm going to do, when you go to Blogger, you create an account. I've already created an account because I plan ahead. And so I'm going to sign in. And sign in. I don't know. Error says, how have we got like four web pages up? Volume control. Oh, okay, I don't know what that is. Okay. See, we got it again. Must be some good stuff on there. All right, now we're okay. I see what happens. That's the home page. Yeah. Oops. See, this is the problem of not having my website. I have all these links on the website. But, okay. Who put the semicolon where the L should be? Alright, sorry about that. This is what, when you create an account in Blogger, this is basically what you get. And you notice it completely ignored the size directive I just gave this. If you are ever creating web pages, if you're ever creating web pages, make sure that if somebody wants to increase the size, that they can. Because you get people out there who are like me, I can't see. That's why I hit semicolons instead of L's. So I need big text anyways. And so if I go to a website and I can't increase the text, it's useless to me. I just can't read it. Anyhow, this is what Blogger gives you. And what I've done on this site is I've actually created several blogs. It's very easy to create a blog using Blogger. And I'll just click, and there's a big button here. Create a blog. So, just click on that, and what will I call it? I'll call it Africa, because I have no imagination. And so, I'm going to see now, I'm going to try for the address, africa.blogspot.com. Check availability. And, nope, somebody's already taken it. What a surprise. That's B-L-O-E-N. Is that right? 2 days only. Oh. We go there later. Long from time. Africa. I still have no imagination. Aha. That one worked. And now, this thing here, those letters, that's called a CAPTCHA, C-A-P-T-C-H-A. And what that does is it's trying to test to see if a human being is creating this logic. Of course, me with my eyes, it's 50-50. But, you know, computer-created blogs, that's a big problem out there now, because you have advertisers, and they create these advertising blogs, and they create a million of them in an afternoon. So they're everywhere. So anyhow, so I typed in my word, I hit continue. You see how hard that was, right? Everything so far. Oh, okay. Now, my blog is created, but I need to choose a template or a design for my blog. So, there's a whole bunch of choices here. Oops. Oh, right. Shouldn't use that little. Why would they do it like that? Why would the podium be to the left of the computer? Makes no sense. Did it move? No. Usability is everywhere. Everywhere. It's like when you go to get coffee at a cafeteria sometimes, and you have to, everybody lines up and they go through, right? And they go through and they get the coffee cup, and then they pour their coffee, and then they get their cream, and oh, the spoons are back there. Usability is everywhere. Let's choose this one.
Stand on this side.
I like that. Okay, so I picked that one. All I did is click on it, and I'll hit continue. And creating my blog. And then a miracle happens. Well, then the animated graphic comes up. Your blog has been created. This one's pretty easy, eh? Like, this is something, and this is the thing. Anyone can do this. Just about anyone. You know, and it's not hard to do at all. So, I must have hit start posting there. You see, so that arrow there, I just hit that. And now, we come to the staple part of all blogging software. This is so familiar. You see this everywhere. There's this editing screen. And it sometimes looks a little bit different, but pretty much they're always the same. And to wrap up my talk, I love you all that. So, hello, Africa. Oops, where's that? Hello, Africa.
No,
none. You know, it's a published. I didn't have to publish it. I could have saved it as a draft, but I don't believe in saving drafts and editing my work. I type something, I want it online now. Okay, so, let's view the blog. And, it's actually taking us longer to see the blog than it took to create it. Isn't that interesting? So it's going to be coming up here, and there it is. Now, what I'm just showing you here, and the important thing is, this is online now, this is on the internet. Anyone in the world can see this if they have internet access. It's very accessible, and it took me a second to create it. I didn't need advanced knowledge, I don't need a PhD or even a computer science degree or anything. I can create this content on the internet. And here's a blog that's it's not my main blog, it's my sort of backup blog to my website account. But this is a blog that I've had running for a while now, since the last couple of years. Blogger has been around since, I don't know, 5 years or something now. So here's the advertisement for the Skype cast and all of that. You can read other people's blogs just like we're looking at mine here. So here's my homage to Steve Irwin. And it's kind of, you know, Steve Irwin and Africa in one post. It's kind of different, but my site probably still isn't working, is it? But do we have sounds coming out of this computer? Yes? told you I would deviate from the script on the drop of the dime, so let's see if this works. Because when I was in Australia a couple of years ago, I actually went to Steve Irwin's Australian Zoo, and he was there, and I actually saw him feeding babies to crocodile mountain. But I saw him like feeding crocodiles and things like that. And you know, I always liked Steve Irwin. His name is Steve Irwin. And the reason why is because of the passion that he brings to his work. And you could see that very clearly when you see him in action live. And it's funny because, you know, he did a show and then he went off and he's just wandering around in the water and I sort of snuck around in the stands and sort of watched him. I took some video, but I don't have it here. Watched him doing his work behind the scenes. You know, and nobody's watching him there. He's having more fun there than in front of the crowd. He's pushing crocodiles along. Come on. So, yeah, he's always inspired me. So, and if there's a tech person, we should be getting sound coming on here in just a second. Why are my onions all falling? Is there something that scrambles logins going up? Because those shouldn't be failing. I can't read it. Sorry, I'm looking for something specific, and I don't see it. I told you, I have bad eyes, and I can't read this screen. So view text size, bigger. I'm just going to have, where'd it go? Well, that pops up again. Sorry about this. It should be, what I was looking for, should be right there. Oh, pub sub. I see what's happened. I told you I'm jet lagged. Completely different euro. Sorry about that. Anyhow, I was in Australia in 2001. Here we go. And we'll try to sign in again. I was in Australia, see again, like if I use my computer, no password, everything's remembered. And so I always prefer to use my computer when I can, so I never have to do this kind of stuff. So, come on. And I had, basically, I was in Melbourne, Australia for 3 months. And if you ever get the chance to go to Melbourne, Australia for 3 months, you do it. I guess it's kind of a no-brainer. It keeps giving me this. Pardon? Okay. Thank you. And while I was there, I was working, I was doing work and online learning and things like that, I tried to experiment with some technology. And this is going to be a little bit coming up. And so, I used to smoke back then. I don't smoke anymore, so I can't do this kind of thing anymore. I missed that. Let's see if it remembers me. 50-50, right? Just as an aside, I hate logins. You may not have guessed that. You can see how good I am at them. I hate them with a passion. Logins are the most miserable thing that has ever been invented on the internet. And I have no idea why this one is working. And the reason why I hate logins is because who can remember all of these logins? Yeah, well, I'm trying. Again, like, and the problem is, I don't remember my username and my password on all of these sites, right? Because there's hundreds of them. And even when I use my own name, I can't show you. This is going to be a problem, actually. I wasn't expecting to be using this computer, so. So one of the things I've worked on is a single sign-in. You sign in once, and then all of these other sites you go to, you don't have to log in at all. I really can't believe that this isn't working well. No, that's it. Okay, that's, I give up.
Maybe we could just jump ahead and sort of, I don't know where you're at in terms of your planning for the day, but I'm real interested in blogging as a learning activity.
Sure.
And, you know, you've had a lot of experience with it. I've been using it. I know from this audience that a lot of others have been using it. I've been very excited. I've been using it for a couple of years for my students.
Mm-hmm.
So I was blown away. I don't particularly like journals in the classroom. It's a one-on-one activity.
Right.
And even though it opens some new areas, that's the subjective stuff, it never felt right. But the blogs are incredible because you have students who are now able, if they're willing, if they decide that they'll allow their own confidentiality to be exposed, they share it not only with their students, with other students, rather than just yourself, but it becomes even, as you say, you know, it's possible for people, other people, to take a look at it. And so suddenly what has become a journal one-on-one kind of okay activity becomes a very powerful extra classroom activity. And that's what I was hoping you might want to talk about a little bit about the learning that's involved here, and that maybe while you're sorting out some of this other stuff, we could begin a conversation. And again, I apologize if I'm jumping ahead for your plans.
Don't apologize. I mean, what you said there is exactly right, and was in fact mostly what I was going to say. This is what I've seen when I've seen students who blog, and when I've talked to teachers who have students who blog, it's the public face of the blog that makes it different from any other sort of writing. In a class, you know, you write all the time. You write a journal, you write an essay, whatever. But when you create a blog and you put it online, like the one that I just created, the entire world is now able to view your blog. And that does tend to change people's attitudes toward their writing. It changes it because they actually pay attention to what they're saying, because somebody other than the teacher is going to see this. And so you see that happening. And the other thing, and this doesn't happen automatically, you kind of need to tweak it a little bit. I'll talk about some of the mechanisms for that, is that the students are able to read each other's blogs. And particularly if you encourage them to comment on or to offer criticisms of their other blogs, then a conversation tends to happen back and forth between the students. And so this dialogue begins to take place. It takes place outside of the classroom environment. Now, they might be doing it in class, but very often this happens outside the classroom environment, and they're doing it on their own time. Now, like I said, this doesn't happen automatically. And the students, their first thought is they'll write their blog post and that's it, we're done. And I wrote a paper, and there is a link to it, which might work, called Educational Blogging, because it's not on my website, and it doesn't require a login. So it's on the EDUCAUSE website in the United States, so maybe it'll come, maybe it won't. Where you know, when I tried to consider, you know, what's the first step in getting students to use blogs, and everybody's talking about, okay, we're getting them to write about something. The first step to getting students to use blogs is to get them to read blogs. The first step in writing a blog or writing a blog post is to read things. And you might think, well, how are they going to get practice doing that? But if you think about it, imagine, you know, you know your students, imagine you took your students and you put them in a room and then you said, talk about something. Well, you know what would happen, right? They'd sit there and they wouldn't talk about anything because they wouldn't be able to think of anything to say. And the same thing happens when they're going to create a post online. That's when it comes in. Very, very impatient. You sit them down in front of Blogger and they create their blog and they have a lot of fun with that. It's so easy to do. They spend a lot of time on their templates. And they create beautiful templates with, you know, gilding and pictures and all of that sort of stuff. And then they go to do their first post and they realize, I've got nothing to say. And all of the fun disappears from it right then. And so, and I can't link to it because, again, my website's down, but I wrote an article called How to Be Heard. And later on, if you do a Google search for that article, just downs and then quotation marks, How to Be Heard, quotation marks. And you'll find that article. It'll be the top item on the links. And in that article, what I said is, you know, in addition to the reading, you need to think about the sorts of things that you're interested in. Because everybody's interested in things, right? I assume everyone here has interests. Some of you are interested in medicine, or at least working medicine. Some people are interested in bicycling, maybe, or scuba, well, maybe not scuba diving here, but sometimes the examples don't always work. So I live 20 kilometers from the sea, so mind you, it's the North Atlantic. They don't scuba dive there either. They turn into ice cubes. The hobbies, with me, it's photography. I'm trying to turn black. Neither gotten like two sentences in. And the thing is, you know, and if you look around, and what I say is, look around where you live. Look at the books that are on your bookshelf. Look at the tools, the toys, any sports equipment that you might have, and almost like take a mental inventory and ask yourself, what am I interested in? If I was a total stranger in this house, and I'm looking around this house, what would this house tell me about what I'm interested in? And then write it down. And those are the sorts of things that you'll likely want to talk about. Is the hand up there?
I would like to explore the previous people's questions and ask the question, how public should the blogs be? Small community, bigger community?
Yeah, the question is how public should the blogs be? And, you know, there are numerous answers to that. I liked what they did at a school in Quebec City called Institut Saint-Joseph, where they actually had three separate sets of blogs. And one blog was strictly private. It was for the students and the teacher only. And then a second blog was for inside the school, and the parents could see it. And then the third blog was completely public. Anyone could see it. Now, a lot of people say, and I've heard this a lot, that you should keep your blogs inside the school firewall. So when they post their blog, only other people in the school can see it. And, you know, it's for privacy and security and things like that. Especially younger kids, they will be careless and they'll put information they shouldn't put on the internet. But the thing is, if you do that, you've broken the main thing that makes blogs work. And the main thing that makes blogs work is the world can read them. So now you sort of stage it, though, right? You know, you don't, just like, you know, you wouldn't take a six-year-old kid, take the kid downtown and say, okay, go make a thing. You know, we wouldn't do that. But what we want is, but we want them to be able to go out, to go downtown, to be able to do whatever.
That's interesting. Let's try and solve the problem.
Okay.
Does it remember that's the nice thing when you're a speaker, you can always like to think with your side and say, because like you know they're gonna be talking about you, like when you're leaving, should have gotten first. I'm just kidding. Well, Will Richardson is much better. No. Also, too, it's not just the readership. Remember, again, the interests that I was talking about, right? Everybody has their own interests. But in a school environment, especially a small school, I've done work in rural schools, there might be nobody else in the school interested in the same thing that you are. Right? So if you block access to the rest of the world, now you have formed a community of one. The conversations are allowed, trust me. I've tried it, it's working. And so, you know, you're not, the idea of the blog, what makes it pedagogically attractive is not simply that other people are reading it, but now you find yourself becoming a part of a community that exists worldwide of people who are interested in the same thing that you are. Or perhaps who believe the same things that you believe, or whatever, right? However you define how you want your community to be. So, me, I like science fiction. So, I read all the science fiction. I grew up in a little town in Ontario called Metcalf, which you've never heard of. It was 500 people. Near Ottawa, it was pretty small. I'm the only person in that town that liked science fiction. And you can imagine the town library. And so I went to read their science fiction collection, and a week later I've done both the books.
Can I install something on the computer?
Yes.
So,
and you know, I grew up, there was no internet. So it wasn't until I was an adult that I just said, oh, there's such a thing like science fiction convention, and the whole world. Trekkies! There's Trekkies! Who knew? And so, And that's what the open access brings, right? And this is important to me. The reason why I think this is important, personally, is that it's empowering. And it's empowering in the sense that it gives the person a sense of belonging, and it gives the person a sense that what they're interested in is, in fact, valuable and useful or popular somewhere. And, you know, when you're the only person in a community that likes something, you know, it's pretty easy to feel like, oh, well, maybe I'm not that important after all. You know, really important people don't like this. Does that mean we need to talk English all the time in the blood? Goodness, no. English, of course, is the most widely used language on the internet. Yeah. Sorry. English. Chinese is very popular, of course, and then you wouldn't believe this, but Farsi. Farsi? Yeah. Iranian bloggers. There's a huge Iranian blogging community. They blog in Farsi. Nobody's ever heard of them. But there's a website out there called Farsi Blogs. It's the biggest blogger, and they do the same thing. And similarly with like blogs.cn, for Chinese bloggers. And speak your own language. Absolutely. You know, like if you can get the keyboard to do all the weird accents and stuff, because I can never do that. But yeah, speak your own language. Now, it means none of the English people will be able to read your blog, because English people, they know English and that's it. I'm just kidding. Sometimes we learn French too. So what? The attitude I always take, you know, you don't give up on stuff like that just because, you know, there's a majority that does something else. You know, I mean, it's, you know, blogs are personal. Welcome about yourself, your interests, your culture, and that includes your language. My understanding of Afrikaans and Zulu is limited as well, so I'm glad this is in the U.S. You like the way I said limited? There's high genomes, so they're just not good at it. So yeah, the question, I'm sorry, I forgot the first part, I'm really sorry, I told you jet lag, but how do you use blogs to learn, and then the issue of language, you know, there are some of the languages. Yeah, you see, I need to address that first. Language, in Canada, language is a really sensitive issue. Because, of course, we have the English, which is the majority, and then we have a very large French minority, and then we have Inuit, which is spoken by the Inuits, who live in the Arctic, and then there are a bunch of First Nations languages. And then Canada, of course, is a land of immigrants, so you go on the street, you hear everything, Chinese, Italian, and so on. But mostly the English-French thing. And the way you phrased that sort of struck me. And the way you phrased that, you said something like, you come to an agreement beforehand, right? Now, and it struck me because I'm asking, how genuine is that agreement? Right? Particularly in a classroom setting, where you have an imbalance of power, right? And the teacher says, okay, we'll all agree to speak English, and the person who speaks French in the back of the room, I didn't agree to this, or they're actually going, oh, yeah. Actually, you speak French, just not very well in public. You know what I mean? And so you kind of have to be careful with that. And in the end, it becomes a practicality thing. The Europeans are facing the same thing. I've done a bunch of things in Europe. I can go to any conference in Europe. Everything's in English. And you go to France, and the conference is in English. I'm in France and I'm speaking English. It's like you get away with something. But I think that's a temporary situation. And I think we need to treat it as a temporary situation. That the divide that we have in languages today is not permanent. And that does not mean everybody is going to speak English or Norwegian or whatever. Can you imagine it? It was Norwegian, right? Everyone had to learn Norwegian. And it just wouldn't happen. I think that first with text and then with audio, automated translation, automatic translation services will become available. And in Europe and in Canada, the way we actually pragmatically address the language issue is the simultaneous translation. And, sometimes you can't do it simultaneously. Sometimes you have to do it later, translate text or whatever. But it's the translation is what happens. And the reason for that is to preserve the integrity and the importance of the other language. Right? Even if you don't need to do the translation, and in Canada, every French person in the room speaks English. You don't need to do it, but you still do it. And now we're getting almost to the point where we have bad text-based translation online, and eventually we'll have bad voice-based translation. And eventually after that, within our lifetimes, it'll be good. Now, I did see a hand of a serious friend. I haven't forgotten your other question. I'll come back to it.
wanted to comment on her first part of her question, which I thought was really important and good, is that, and I also think the language conversation is very, very important.
Yeah.
They're two separate, a little bit two separate things, but if I could just comment so maybe others could respond. What I found incredibly interesting about the blogs as a learning activity was that I didn't anticipate what happened. In other words, I was teaching a course on slavery and the slave trade, and asking students, just because it could be done, to create some blogs, and then discovered that they brought conversations, threads, to the learning that I had never thought about. And that then, the more I looked at it, that was several years ago,
right,
the more exciting it becomes that instead of, and her question was about planning ahead and how do you organize the learning. It we've all talked about active learning strategies, but in fact, it was ripped out of my hand, and a conversation began that were so rich, but I didn't plan them. I didn't organize all that stuff.
Yeah, if you want to read instances of that sort of thing, read Konrad Glogowski's book. I can't spell that. I'll put it on the wiki later on, assuming I can get into editing. Konrad Glogowski. He teaches, I believe it's high school class that he teaches, and he relates exactly the same experience. And I think my reaction, you've been reading ahead. My reaction to a question like, how do you get blogs to assist learning? As I've worked on the internet, as I've worked with these technologies, I've become more and more of the view that directing learning is the wrong way to go. That where possible, you want to step back and let the students organize their own learning. Now, if you just did that, it would be a disaster, right? But if you begin with that attitude, you begin with that from the outset, that can happen. And the reason why I know it can happen is that it does happen. I'll give you an example. All of you. Now, some of you have read my website, right? And then actually, I'm just curious now. How many of you read my website or my newsletter? Oh, just the tiniest few. Okay, I'll give you all the rest of you the web address later. and I won't make you log in, I promise. But I have lots of people all over the world who read the newsletter. I don't direct them in learning at all. I don't say, okay, this week we're going to study podcasting, next week we're going to study blogs or whatever. But people still learn from my writing and the writing of other people who are working on the same sort of area, the same sort of field. And they learn on their own. And so what happens is the learning basically becomes this interaction, this conversation, if you will, between myself, right? And I just write on my website. And I write about what I'm thinking about, what my experiences are, what I've learned. And I'm not trying to tell people how to learn the same thing. I just describe what I did. And then people, they take that and they take it with a grain of salt, maybe. You don't have to believe what I say. I strongly recommend you don't believe everything I say. But you take that and you match it, and I always tell people, like, match what I say with your own experience. Your own experience is more valuable to you than anything I can say. And so this, it comes together like this. And there isn't that direct thing. And that's, the title of this talk, or it was until I couldn't edit Johnny's talk, was E-Learning 2.0. One of the fundamental premises of E-Learning 2.0 is that the teacher no longer directs the learning. And imagine that. The change, and this is not just in learning, the change that we're going through in Canada, maybe less in the US and Europe and so on, is that education is moving from being something that we give to people, something that we provide. It's moving away from being a service, and it's becoming something people do for themselves, and we help them. We put the services in place, but we don't do it for them. You can't. Right? There's 6 billion people on the planet. You can't give them all learning. There's too many people to give them all learning, but if you have them learn and able to learn themselves, then you have some sort of shot at it. And giving an example to put this into context, and I'm going to do this all in one sentence because the fax machine. You're all familiar with fax machines, right? And brilliant device, right? You can, little machine, put a piece of paper in it, and it goes, and out the other end, 1,000 miles away, an exact copy of the piece of paper. Brilliant, right? And when fax machines first came out, we had the mail services, the courier services, you know, UPS and FedEx and all these other companies. And they looked at the fax machine and their first reaction was, great, technology for delivering messages. That's what we do. And so all the FedEx offices, they got fax machines and they offered the new, like, e-post or e-courier or whatever, right? Electronic courier, right? And what you do is you have your letter and you go down to the FedEx office, you give them the letter, you give them $5, they fax it for you, and you go home, the other person gets your letter. Well, what happened, what actually happened is people bought their own fax machines. Nobody needed that service because they could do it themselves. And so all these companies, it wasn't FedEx so much, it was other companies we no longer know of, all these companies that depended on providing this electronic service went out of business. Right? But the companies that helped people do things for themselves, like companies that made fax machines, they succeeded. Now, you can go ahead. How's that for a long sentence? The 5 semicolons. Okay, I understand what you're saying. I'm going to, this is just a prop. It might work, it might not. Eventually on this hood. See, it can go fast when it wants to, right? It wasn't the connection, it was Google and those other sites. Anyhow, this is MySpace. It's similar to Blogger. Except, you know, you create your own sort of website, and it was originally created as a music fan site, right? And you'd promote your band, and then the fans would come on, they'd write about the band. But as it turned out, they started writing about everything. And MySpace has 86 million accounts, right? Real accounts, not the computer generated, real human accounts that get used. So when somebody says, they don't write spontaneously. The evidence is overwhelming that that's not true. They do write spontaneously. So, and you know, it's not just my space, right? You can go out there, like, there's, you know, these students, they're writing, like, all over the place. All of them. And if they're not writing on the web, they're texting. right? There are no end to student writing. So the problem isn't that they don't write. The problem is they don't write about economics. Because who likes economics? Well, actually, there are some blogs about economics, but mostly, I liked economics when I was in school, but I was weird. Again, I was the only person in my school who liked economics. I actually went to the advanced economics, grade 13 economics, just because I could.
Weird.
So now we have a bit of a dilemma. And this dilemma is a very common one. I see this all the time. And it's, here's all this technology, and it really looks like the kids like it. 86 million MySpace accounts, right? And here's what we're trying to do in the schools, and they wouldn't use this technology in the school if you paid them. And then you sort of know how the technology doesn't work. And my response is, well, maybe it's the school that's not working. And that's the turn that education or e-learning 2.0 takes, right? Now, and I'm not alone in this. And one of the major proponents of this is a guy called Seymour Papert, P-A-T-E-R-T. You may have heard of him. He's the person who convinced the governor of Maine to give every grade 7 student in the state a laptop of their very own. It's called the Maine Laptop Program. They have no imagination either. And Papert is very, is that, okay, good, thank you. Pre-arranged signals. In 5 minutes, the muscle will come running through. Papert is a strong proponent of student-directed, student-led learning, and he talks about learning taking place in the context of games. And, of course, when somebody's playing a game or doing whatever they want on the internet, the question comes up, will they take their fundamental important subjects like economics, or even more importantly, like, well, in Canada, will they take English or French or both? Will they take mathematics? And what Papert says is, the problem is the students don't like to take these foundational subjects. And everybody wants to make them take the subject because it's foundational. You need to have it. And he says, well, if you need to have it, if it really is foundational, then when you are doing what you want to do, you will need to learn it. If you don't need to learn it, it was never foundational. You didn't need it. So the student goes online, student wants to create a blog or whatever, what's the first thing you're going to have to be able to do? They're going to have to be able to write. And so when they create their blog, they have this motivation to write, to learn how to write. And in the practice of writing, they get better. Right now, we look at student blogs and say, that's really bad writing. It is really bad writing, but they're kids. You look at their essays and that's really bad writing too. But over time, they get better. And in the games as well, especially where there's a lot of simulated activities, they need to learn things to be able to succeed in the game. And if it's foundational, then they'll learn it. Now, how am I doing on that time there? We must be about time to make that change. On the tape? Okay. Now we spend time on it. Taking the tape out. Now, the question is, does this part of the talk really exist? Because there's no tape. Are we back on? See, we're still in this limbo of not existing. I spend most of my life in that. Alright. So, and so that's the answer that I give, and it's a hard answer because nobody can do that in their classroom right now. But I never take the premise that we should be able to do in the classroom, we should be able to do online what we do in the classroom. And I never take that as a premise, because online is fundamentally different. And the way it is fundamentally different is that the user is in control. And look at Blogger, right? I just created a blog, right? You saw me. Did I ask anyone's permission? I went to type something, a message in my blog. Did I say, can I write this? Right? No. And what you have on the internet now is a billion people making their own decision about what to write. Now, we're in like, you know, year 10 of this, the 10th year. That's it. You know? And so we're just at the very beginning of this. People are just getting used to the idea. You know, a lot of people still can't get used to the idea. I can write anything. You know, and I could, but you know, go to that blog and you just watch me. I won't. You have to teach politeness too. But I could. And so these communities become self-governing. Communities of practice or communities of interest. People, you know, and there are people out there actually who are interested in economics. And some of your students will be interested in economics. Maybe one. Maybe none. It depends on the year, right? But those students can tap into this economics community practice. And the rest of them, if they need economics later on, there'll be stuff available. We'll talk about that later on in the session. And if they don't need it, if it never comes up, why are they learning it? It's like trigonometry. I've told this story before, but I love telling this story. Grade 12 mathematics, I studied trigonometry. You know, it's angles, it's cosines, and so on. And I hated it. I hated math. Math, visual, awful, horrible subject. I preferred to read. So I read stuff, I wrote stuff, anything but math. I got like a 51 in trigonometry. I failed English that year. I was already doing the student-directed learning. I failed English because they made me do these tests. I didn't approve of the tests, so I boycotted the tests. It turns out if you boycott the test, you don't pass. And I took the exam anyways just for fun. I got like a 41 in the course. It really bugged the teachers. You can imagine how well I learned trigonometry. And then I got out of school and I worked, you know, I worked in the convenience stores and I worked as a janitor in a place and as a security guard. And all, you know, I eventually said, this is dumb. I went to college, Algonquin College in Ottawa, and signed, this was in 1980, I signed on for the computer science program. They gave me one course in computer science, and they decided I needed a good general education. There's trigonometry again. So I took trigonometry again. And this was applied because of electronics. Right? I didn't want electronics, but you know, it's 1980, they thought that would be important. So I took trigonometry a second time. I got the D. Still wasn't my best subject. And time went by, and I left Ottawa because there was no work, and my student loans didn't work, and I went to Calgary. Calgary is about 4,000 kilometers from Ottawa. It was like emigrating to a new country, except they all spoke English. There's no French there. That's a Calgary joke. I got a job in the computer industry. I just typed in my one computer course. And so I began working for Texas Instruments. And I worked with them for a while, but then they said, well, we're not going to prolong you because you don't have an education. You don't have a university degree. I thought, well, this is dumb. And so I quit Texas Instruments. I was making $1,300 a month. I had never seen that much money in my life. And left Texas Instruments, went to university, and they admitted me. They didn't want to. I was admitted as a non-matriculated adult, and the thing that I didn't have, of course, was mathematics. So they had me take a pre-university course in, say it with me, trigonometry. Got an A in that course. Still didn't know trigonometry. I learned trigonometry eventually, because I always liked programming computers. Star Trek fan, right? Remember that? There's always a reason for these things. These talks all come together. I always say that, so hopefully around like hour or two. By hour six, this will all make sense. And so, the purpose for me of programming computers was to create the ultimate Star Trek game. And one of the things I wanted to do with my ultimate Star Trek game was using Turbo C, so I had to code all the graphics by hand. I didn't have nice graphics programs and animation and smile and 3D stuff. So I'm coding all of my graphics. I have to draw vectors. And I want to rotate a cube. That was before the board even. I wanted to rotate a cube. In order to rotate a cube on a computer screen, you have to know trigonometry. So there I am, Christmas break, and my Christmas breaks, and in fact, this is what I would do, right? Because, I don't have to do anything. So I get up early in the morning, sit down in front of the computer, code until I dropped. And it's 9, 10 o'clock at night. Then I go to the Strathcona, have a beer, come back home, go to sleep, do the same thing the next day. Oh, I loved it. It was brilliant. Right? I'm doing it. And so I'm trying to rotate this cube. Thinking about what could possibly do a little bit of search around it. Oh, trigonometry. Well, I've got three trigonometry textbooks. Right, because that was before the days of the internet. So I hauled the textbooks off the shelf, blew the dust off them, and studied trigonometry on my own. And I made that cube rotate. Well, I made it rotate, and as it rotated, it kind of shrank, and then I wasn't as good a computer programmer as I would have liked to have been. But the thing is, when I needed to rotate a cube, that's when trigonometry became important. That's what made it foundational. Until then, I never needed it. And why would I learn it? Why would I put in any effort into it? And it turns out, I didn't. And I don't think I'm that unique. The only thing that makes me unique is the way I spent my Christmas vacation coding Star Trek games. But, everybody has their own interests. And this is not just me saying this. Seymour Papert invented a computer language called Smalltalk that would enable students to do the same sort of thing, right? Computer programming for kids. And the idea is that they create, they do their own thing. They follow their own interests. E-learning 2.0, and I started with Blogger, is an approach that has to do with creating. E-learning 2.0 is anything that has to do with is creating. How to create your own content yourself. So we saw Blogger. And Blogger is, it's just a tool. It's kind of dull, it's kind of dry, it's not really very educational. But, it's really pretty basic. And, not that interesting. It's not interesting to each and none of you are listening to doing this sort of stuff. You see how that sort of failed almost waking up in 10 minutes? And I'm trying to lead and you're all trying to follow, but the interests are sort of drifting apart. But the kids now, there's 86 million MySpace accounts. They are creating like crazy because they can. Because that's what people do. I talked about, and I'll talk later on, about Creative Commons. And people always say, you can't get anybody to create things unless you pay them. And I said, go around the houses in our city. I haven't been around this country enough, but I'm sure it's the same. Except maybe have slightly different things, but in Canada, you go around the houses and there's these wooden butterflies on the side of the house. Right? People just put wooden butterflies on the side of their house. And I'm like, why? Who paid them to do that? Well, nobody. Right? They actually had to go out and buy the butterflies and paint them, buy the nails and a hammer and nail them to their house, and hope they didn't break the insulation. A lot of work to put a butterfly in the house. And yet they did it anyways. Why?
I think I understand that you say the students are creative. I think the challenge lies to get that creativity inside context of a specific module or academic program.
Well, that's right.
That's the challenge for most of the people here from the higher education side to contemplate that issue. How do we get that inside our academic program and still be able to say that the product that the students created and the product that we have to supply at the end of the program needs to be more outside?
All right. The nice way to respond to that, and debating. Well, because what you're saying is, after everything you said, how still do we get them to do what we want them to do, right? And like, and my response is, well, no, that's not how it works, right? And yeah, the question is, how do I get a student to do what I want the student to do instead of what the student wants to do? And if that's the basic premise of education is broken.
I just wanted to make a suggestion that works very well in the context that I'm using the higher ed as well. That the challenge is often to create an authentic type, which doesn't have to be very narrowly defined, but that if you think that the criteria in what is required for your coursework to take the attention to class, and then the students, and give them they have the technology, they have the collaborative tools, they then create that class. The authentic class might be about creating a pamphlet to help other students with economics who find it difficult. Some of the authentic classes in our meeting is about creating tools that will help other students with the particular topic. I mean, that really, to me, is always the challenge. And it doesn't have to be very narrowly defined. And then the students can actually run with it, use the tools, and meet the criteria. This is the criteria that how they get to it and what they create is very difficult for them. And
right.
It seems to work very well in the world.
And that's... You're quite right. The for the people who are listening on audio, and I certainly hope you haven't stopped the audio. Okay. That's why I have two recordings. Good, thank you. The comment was to get the students to do an authentic task, such as if they're in economics, to create a guide on how to do economics. And I view that as a good halfway point, right? Again, you're still getting them to do something, right? And if the students wanted to learn and were interested in learning economics, you wouldn't have to tell them, create an economics pamphlet. You would have to answer questions like, how do I create an economics pamphlet? And you see the difference, right? So it's still a question, you know, do you want to be teaching these students economics at all if they're not interested in it? And again, it's not like education is cheap. And so, you know, it strikes me, and this is just my view, and there are millions of educators around the world who would disagree with me, but it doesn't seem like a good use of education money to teach the unwanted to the unwilling. You know? That's just my view. But you're quite right, because we sort of entered this discussion a bit earlier in the talk, but that's fine. But where e-learning 2.0 takes you is in a roundabout way to that environment, where people do become parts of online communities of practice, and being a part of that online community of practice is to create things. And it's in the process of this creating things, this authentic task that they have chosen for themselves in being part of this community that leads to the learning. Time for tea?
Well, I think that sounds like a good idea.
Those of you who drink coffee, you may. So, okay, and how long is the break, please? I'm sorry?
Half an hour.
Okay, so we'll see you all back here in half an hour. And I promise I will talk about more than just water and mindset. Trust me.